This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.
Character, drama, character drama. It can feel daunting to develop any one of these on their own, but what if there were a way to develop them in tandem with one another? Well, there is, and this episode's guest will explain how she does just that in her own work. Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 71 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. This episode's guest is Brenda Marie Smith, the winner of the Southern Fried Karma 2018 novel contest for her most recent release, If Darkness Takes Us. Aside from her contest win, Brenda studied fiction in the UCLA Writers Program, and when she lived in Oklahoma City, she was part of the Back to the Land movement, living off the grid in the Arkansas Ozark Mountains. She later joined an off-grid vegan hippie community in Tennessee before moving to Austin, Texas, where she now lives in a grid-connected, solar-powered home with her husband and their self-assured kitty cat. All of this experience informed her novel If Darkness Takes Us, which of course figures into our conversation on character and drama here today. So without further ado, let's hop into my interview of author Brenda Marie Smith. Stay tuned after our conversation for updates on what you can expect next from the RightsCast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Brenda Marie Smith, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. I really appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing this topic with you also after having read your most recent novel, that being If Darkness Takes Us. I'm sure that there'll be plenty of opportunities to stitch in your experience writing that book into this conversation, which is about the relationship between characterization and drama. So why don't we start by asking, what is the relationship between these two things?
Well, I had an editor who put it this way, your characters are your drama. So if you think about it, all the kinds of events and activities can happen in a story. But what we care about as readers or as viewers is how these activities and events impact the characters. So like if a tree falls in the forest, is there drama? No, unless it's a children's book or a fantasy where the trees are people or have personhood. Like in Lord of the Rings, or if an asteroid hits an uninhabited planet, we might get dramatic visual effects, but there's no one to worry about or mourn for, no struggle of characters to tug at our hearts, and therefore there's no drama. But if an asteroid knocks Mars out of orbit and it threatens to collide with Earth, then you have the opportunity for drama. But the real drama comes from the impact of this threat on specific characters. So my editor even took this further, and he said that your characters and their character arcs are your plot. And to have a real plot with meaning, your main character or characters must have something at stake that is so important to them, they would not be themselves if they didn't pursue a resolution. So, for instance, if a mother didn't fight to save her child's life, she not only wouldn't be much of a mother, she would not be a good dramatic character. So, like most of us have dramatic events in our lives, but very few of us have true drama, where we have to put our lives on the line or our consciences on the line for something we believe in so strongly that we could not live with ourselves if we didn't follow through. It's moral choices, moral dilemmas. That's what great stakes are made of.
It sounds like you got a lot of really good insight from your editor, you know, when they clarified and brought some of this to the forefront of your mind. But did you find that some of this had naturally already been in your manuscript and you just didn't realize it? Or did you really have to work with your editor to sort of bake that in based on their vision?
This editor was on my first novel, Something Radiates, and so I had had him beforehand, and, but, you know, it's hard to remember all these things
right
when you're putting it to work, so I had to continually dive back in to If Darkness Takes Us to to keep tweaking it, to get it right. But I did get a much better sense of how to do that and how important it was from the editor for Something Radiates. So, like, if you think about the stories that you've seen that are the most memorable ones to you, they're the ones with great characters. So take Seinfeld, for instance. Like, they created this amazing cast of characters that was so good, the writers could put the group in any situation and the characters would make the story work. And they had this ongoing joke on the show that it was a show about nothing. That's because what happened didn't matter much. What mattered was the way the characters interacted and the hilarity that followed, right? So it's a similar situation for characters in The Walking Dead, especially for the first several seasons. I avoided watching that show forever because it's zombies and they're gross, you know. But when I finally watched it, I was so captured by the drama, I just could not believe how good the drama was. So you have these great characters, and you put them in a variety of perilous situations, and the story works not because of zombies, but because the characters have depth and consistency of personality, and they evolve plausibly based on things that happen to them. And the zombies are just the source of peril, the peril that puts the characters under pressure. The living characters are the source of the drama.
Yeah, and that's a really great way to kind of tease out the difference between perhaps plot devices or events, things that happen to characters, versus the drama that exists as a result of maybe the reader's relationship or the viewer's relationship to character and the character's relationship to those events. That said, I wonder, since, you know, in theory, something does need to come first, what tends to come first to you? Is it these plot points, or do you have an idea about character first and you get a feel for what their arc might look like? Which do you really find yourself developing first in your mind?
Well, usually what happens with me, and it's different for every writer, of course, but with me, I usually come up with a certain kind of character in a particular situation, and then I build a story around that. So, for instance, in my first novel, I had the idea of a single mother who would be harassed and haunted by her ex-husband and would have to use, it was a paranormal novel, so she had to use her powers of telepathy and her spiritual beliefs to save herself and her kids. And in that case, the spiritual beliefs were based on hippie lore, Zen Buddhism, the teachings of Timothy Leary and Carl Jung, Carlos Castaneda. I call it a psychedelic thriller. And then for my novel that just came out, If Darkness Takes Us, all I knew at the start was that I wanted a grandmother to be raising grandkids in an apocalyptic situation. I didn't even know what kind of disastrous situation it would be. I had to search for the right one to fit the characters. So I didn't want a nuclear disaster because I didn't want my characters to all die off or be horribly sick with radiation poisoning. And I didn't want a complete environmental collapse for the same reasons. And it wasn't until I heard a discussion on a radio podcast about the damage that could come from a solar pulse that I found the right disaster for my story. Again, because I'm focused on characters, I wanted the situation to be tough for them, but also potentially survivable.
It seems like then you made a really deliberate series of choices to bring all of this to fruition, which I think is really important and worth emphasizing for listeners, is that one idea might come to us before the other, but if we are deliberate in how we want to develop drama from the situation that you've created, and you have a very compelling situation even as a standalone, wherein this grandmother must care for her grandkids in a post-apocalyptic world, whatever that apocalypse might be, that is a really great starting point. And then from there, of course, the real legwork comes in when we have to do the actual writing, and we need to present these characters, and we need to present the situation that we've decided on. So for you personally as a writer, how do you use the presentation of characters in your work to build and sustain that drama or tension?
Well, it's all about how the characters react to the dramatic situations they're in and how they evolve and grow. And they don't always grow for the better, of course. But as far as presentation, I like to put the characters into some action right off the bat, then show how they each react to it differently. And I'm always looking for ways to show rather than tell emotions. But I also generally have the main character report on their state of mind throughout the action scenes and reflect back on things in between the action. So there's a great writing teacher who's no longer with us, Dwight Swain, and he talked about scene and sequel in his book. I think every novelist should read it. It's called Techniques of the Selling Writer. And it's about ways to use the rising and falling drama, rising and falling action throughout a novel to reveal characters as they go through the drama. So you have an action scene, then you follow it up with a sequel scene where the character reflects on what happened, catches his or her breath or bandages or wounds or finds a new clue to the mystery, you know, whatever is going on in the story, and then makes plans for their next moves. Then there's also subtext, which is an art I have yet to master by any means, but it can be fantastic if done well. Like, I really admire John le Carré. He's so great at subtext. Like, he can give us the full sense of a character in the simplest strokes. It's just, and I have read every one of his books. Some of them I've read two or three times. I can't quite figure out how he does it, but if I ever do, I'll let you know. Because he gives, somehow you know these characters, even though he just introduced them.
And when you're talking about subtext, of course, just for listeners who might be new to the world of writing or this is their first time encountering that term, what we're talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong here, at least in your understanding, what we're talking about with subtext is it's that which is not technically said or technically communicated, you know, in a direct, open way, but it is what's kind of beneath the surface. It creates a feeling of something that's been left unsaid, but we kind of get a feel for what that might be. And this is kind of what lies at the core of subtext. Am I in line with your understanding of that here?
Yes. I had a writing teacher who, through the UCLA Writers Program, who had me write a scene where a woman was really angry with her husband, but never says so. And which was a great exercise because you have to, you know, imply it without ever saying it. And you have to be really subtle about it. That was very fun to write, but very hard. Also in Ann Tyler's books, if you've ever read her, she always has these characters who talk at each other. They don't really have complete give and take, you know, where one responds directly to what the other one says. There's a whole lot of subtext there.
Well, it sounds like then between these action-reaction chains or the sort of action and consequence scene breakdown that we have there, as well as subtext, that the takeaway in my understanding is that if we're to really build drama and really build tension, we want to make sure that our characters are living with that tension throughout. They're not only in the moment, but then they have an opportunity to really reflect on and shape that moment, not only for themselves, but of course for readers and, yes, the characters that are around that character as well. And I wonder, as you are perhaps drafting an early draft, is this something that you are actively thinking about while you write, or do you find that this comes in the revision stage more than anything else?
Well, of course, I think about it to a degree all along, but my main goal with the first draft is to get words on the page, get the story sketched out. Some great writer, it may have been Terry Pratchett, said that, you know, the first draft of a story is you're telling the story to yourself, and which I think is really true. And then, so yes, I have to stitch in a lot a whole lot. I'm a big reviser. I believe that writing is rewriting, and I go through my novels probably a couple of hundred times, the whole thing, you know, in certain scenes, more than that maybe, just to be sure that I get it all in there and that it flows. And I also get a lot of feedback from, I have two really great critique partners, and they are great authors themselves, and so they really help me be sure that what, you know, one of them is real stickler about, we have to stick to the through line of the story, meaning we have to have narrative and characterological, that's such a hard word to say, connectivity all the way through the story. So there's all kinds of things as a writer in your mind, you know what you're trying to say and you know what the characters are doing and why they're doing it. But the hard part is to be sure you have it on the page so that other people understand it.
Did you know the RightsCast Network is listener-supported? That's right. Listeners just like you choose to support our programming financially through contributions of $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. In exchange for their support, RightsCast Network patrons can receive awesome rewards, including early, ad-free access to every episode of our programming, RightsCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, shoutouts in our shows, and more. Not only that, but the contributions of RightsCast Network patrons have us painfully close to unlocking a fourth podcast every month. Sound like something you're interested in? Help us bring you more content every month by visiting patreon.com/rightscast and becoming a supporter today. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks for listening. And one of the things that I really appreciated about If Darkness Takes Us is that in the reaction scenes or in the sort of consequence scenes where the characters have that moment to take a breath and yet they're still very much living amid the drama that you have created, you have this way of making sure that that drama is shaped and that we're really basking in the tension that comes from that. But you do it in ways that don't beat the reader over the head with that, so to speak. You're not breaking the fourth wall. You're not having the main character in their inner monologue ask just question after question of themselves that are really meant to be questions posed to the reader. And I really appreciate that because there is a great deal of nuance that comes from that. And I think it creates a more resonant relationship, not only between the character and the drama, but between the two of those components and the reader. And I'm curious to know, why might we want to be more subtle about how our characters bask in the drama or in these reaction scenes as opposed to just coming out and stating how a reader is supposed to feel about it?
It's tricky. It's very tricky. It's very hard. And I did have editors get after me in spots where I had broken the fourth wall, where I posed like a rhetorical question and say, no, don't do that, because where I'd say something like, there was a scene where B had forgotten her dog when she was escaping from the train wreck, and I had said something like, I couldn't very well tell my husband I had forgotten the dog, could I? And they made me take out the could I, because it was direct address to the reader. So it helped a lot. But I do think it's very important not to hammer your readers over the head with your beliefs or with anything. You have to trust that when you tell your story, the emotions are going to come through. That was a really hard thing for me. I had tend to overwrite, and so I tend to blurt out a story and make it way too long, and then I have to go back and with a scalpel and sometimes with a machete and cut things, you know. So, the hardest thing for me is learning to trust my own words. That the voice is there, that people understand what is going on in the story without me over explaining it. I have good editors, I guess I put it that way.
And that's always helpful, right? You know, they're there to help us realize that here is a moment where, though we as the writer were worried that a given reader might not be catching on to what it is we're trying to say, that we can really trust our readers to quote-unquote get it, and that we don't need to, or we probably should avoid, reminding them that they are reading. And when we break the fourth wall, we are saying, ah, yes, here you are, reader, you do exist, and now you are suddenly maybe thinking about other things you could be doing because you've been stirred from the narrative dream, so to speak. So it seems like you've had some great editors, and of course you had all of these things moving in the right direction before you started working with those editors, so that is, of course, a very wonderful thing. But what can other writers learn or take from your approach to how you build character and drama in tandem with one another?
I think you have to keep reading and rereading your story and revising it until you get it right. And you just have to continually hone your craft. And it's very important that your stakes, the character's stakes, are clear. And, like, for instance, I'm writing a sequel right now to If Darkness Takes Us, and it's from the grandson's point of view. And I'm realizing, I was considering it finished, but then I realized, wait a minute, I don't have the stakes clear enough. I don't have the moral dilemmas clear enough. So you got to keep going back to it and until you get all the depth in there, you know, the layers of character depth. And, you know, I borrow really heavily from my own life, but I don't replicate characters. I take this personality, aspect from one character and another aspect from a different person I know, and you know, I jumble it all together. I don't want to write, you know, real life people, but I want to make them seem like real life. So you just have to keep tweaking your character emotions, and you have to get feedback. I do anyways. I think maybe I'm hoping the longer that you write, maybe the less feedback you need, because you'll be have a clearer understanding of when it's working and when it's not without so much feedback. But I get a lot of feedback from other people, and I make sure that the people I get the feedback from are people I can really trust, who are going to be honest with me and not just say, oh, it's good, or the opposite effect. I've had a couple of people way back in the past who were mean about their feedback. I'm like, no, I don't need that.
Right.
I'm hard enough on myself. So it's hard for me to say how others could replicate it. But, you know, I mean, I have all kinds of general writing advice, like don't be married to any particular words. There are so many ways you can say the same things. So, you know, this has happened to me. I've been so in love with some way I wrote something and just refused to see that, as lovely as the words might be, they were not serving the story well. And so I took too long for me to change them or cut them. So that's an important piece of advice, I think. And I also don't buy this idea that you have to write every day. I mean, what? You'll forget how to write if you take a day off? Of course you won't. So if it works for you to write every day, then of course go for it. But I need a lot of time to think. So I spend a lot of time thinking about a story before I ever put a single word on the page. And then I'm doing other things in my life, driving down the street, sitting in a stoplight, you know, I'll be thinking through scenes. I'll, you know, sometimes my husband, I'll be staring out the window, and my husband will go, what are you doing? And I'll go, leave me alone, I'm writing.
It sounds like there's really a parallel here between how when we're looking to maximize or increase drama or further develop it for our characters, you know, we have these action scenes and we have these consequence scenes where, as you've said, you know, this is where they are doing an inventory of what was maybe stolen from them, or they're just trying to process all that unfolded. It seems like in the same way that your characters might have that experience, you as a writer might have that experience when you are not writing. You know, you are considering what maybe you just wrote or what might come next, and it creates this sort of broader tapestry for how writing as a career, as a hobby, fits into our lives in the same way that this drama fits into our characters' lives. Does that seem like a fair comparison?
Yes, it's what I hadn't thought of. I really like it, though.
And if we think about it in that way, too, then it can help give us a little bit of distance between the idea that we need to be writing every day, which, as you say, isn't going to work for some folks. And that's okay as long as we are comfortable with our process and we're putting ourselves in an empowered position to take to the page. One last topic I think I would like to revisit, if you don't mind, is that you mentioned earlier that stakes, of course, are critically important. They were something you wanted to revisit in the sequel to If Darkness Takes Us. And earlier in the conversation than that, you talked about this idea of a through line. And I'm curious to know if there is a relationship between stakes and a through line and what that relationship might be.
Well, yes, the through line is that you have to focus on the stakes all the way through. You can deviate here and there, but you can't go off on long tangents that take you away from the main thrust of the story. So, you know, if you write a novel about a person's life and you build these characters and then they kind of take on a life of their own, you can find a million tangents to write about these people. But the only important the thing to put in your book, you should know all this stuff about your characters, but what you put in the book is are the things that pertain to the central thrust of the story, which are your stakes. So, and the stakes, this tough editor that I had, his name is David, and he told me that stakes have to be something that's so important to your character, morally, that they would not be themselves, or they could not live with themselves if they didn't follow through for a resolution to the stakes. So, like, for instance, if you have a mother who didn't fight to save her child's life, she not only wouldn't be much of a mother, she wouldn't be a good dramatic character, like I said before, because she doesn't have the moral push inside herself to make her save her kid. So it's about moral choices and moral dilemmas. This is something that one of my critique partners pointed out to me in If Darkness Takes Us. B has clear moral choices. She has a duty as a grandmother to take care of her grandkids, and because her own health is failing, feels she has to teach these kids to survive on their own because she has no idea how much longer she'll be with them. But also, she has another big issue in that she had stockpiled for a disaster or an apocalyptic situation for her big family. Most of her big family is not there. It's just her and her grandkids. Meanwhile, she's living in the middle of a neighborhood of people who are starting to starve. And she has to decide, can she share with her neighbors? And is she putting her grandkids at too much risk if she does? And it's a big dilemma for her. It takes her weeks to decide. But she finally decides that she cannot stand by and watch her neighbors die. It's as simple as that. And so for her, that's her moral stakes. So the things that my critique partner pointed out in my sequel, I don't have enough of that kind of moral dilemma for my main character, Kino, and I need to build on that.
It really does seem that in the end, there is a relationship between stakes and our novel's through line. And of course, all of that revolves around our characters, their development, and the development of the drama that comes as a result of all of these being stirred up in the same big pot that is our novel, if we're going with a cooking analogy all of a sudden here. So
right.
a lot of really great takeaways here, Brenda. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about it today. And listeners, again, the novel is If Darkness Takes Us by Brenda Marie Smith. Thank you, Brenda, for joining me on this episode.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having me. I really appreciate it.
And so concludes my interview of Brenda Marie Smith, author of If Darkness Takes Us. If you enjoyed our conversation, I'd love it if you could leave the RightsCast Network a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the RightsCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a 5-star rating and review, thank you. And thank you again to Brenda Marie Smith for joining me for this episode. I, of course, owe additional thanks to the RightsCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/rightscast. In exchange for their support, RightsCast Network patrons get access to some great patron perks, including RightsCast swag, discounts on my editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques from yours truly. If any of this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen today in supporting our programming at a very generous $3 per episode. Or, if $3 per episode is more than you can afford, you can contribute at $1 or $2 per episode or per month as well, all of which will get you access to a number of our fantastic patron perks. So become a supporter today by making your pledge at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is a Novel Approaches episode all about non-linear storytelling. This will be Sione's last episode with us before she takes a break to kick off 2020, so be sure to join us for our conversation about non-linear storytelling to make sure we send her off in style. Until that episode debuts on December 13th, you can stay in touch with the RightsCast Network by visiting rightscast.net or by saying hello on Twitter at RightsCast. We're also now on Facebook and Instagram as well, and our handle on those platforms is, very predictably, RightsCast. You can also reach us by email at rightscast@gmail.com or get in touch with me personally at rrcampbellwrites.com or through Twitter, where my handle is @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Right on. And write well.
This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.